Vanessa Morano has a Teen Choice Award nomination for drama slash action adventure.
Switched at birth. Mm-hmm. How is that?
She's also on The Young and the Restless.
Oh, she is? I could see that.
And Without a Trace.
So what's the last
thing? Yes, and Ghost Whisperer.
Did you ever watch that show?
I did not. Mm. Did they whisper to ghosts?
I think it was this show with Jennifer Love Hewitt, and she was kind of a medium. It was essentially Long Island Medium, except with Jennifer Love Hewitt. Except it
was... That's what I've always wanted. Mm-hmm. Basically, Long Island Medium, except with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Is Long Island Medium still on the air?
Probably. TLC still exists, so... Long Island Medium. No. Wait.
People think
TLC or Wikipedia says is, which means that it's still. I take to mean it's still going. Yeah, it's on season 10.
Wow. What about Little People, Big World? Is that still on?
I don't know. That show always seemed, well, I mean, like, all of TLC seems problematic to me, but that one, that show especially seemed extremely problematic to me. But I never watched it.
I watched it. I don't think it was.
Oh, was it not? No. All right.
I don't think it was.
3 million people, the second season of The Long Island Medium averaged 3 million viewers a week.
People really believed in Teresa. They still believe. Dude,
that is
they
wild.
They still believe in Teresa.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. I like it that the most entertaining thing about most TLC shows that concentrate on a person with an occupation that they're exceptional at, according to TLC,
mm-hmm. like lying. Is that
everything yeah. else about them is more interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right. How do we start the show again?
You're Nikki, right? So you.
Oh yeah.
So you do the intro.
Yep. Okay. Wait, but then the theme song has to play. So I assume I've edited in the theme song. So now that's going. And if you are listening to the show, you're like, oh, I forgot that this thing existed.
Because
it does exist.
We haven't recorded.
We didn't make
since
an episode
October.
For like 5 months. Yeah. We're back, baby.
Oh my gosh, did you just hear my stomach rumble? Right.
Yeah, that was loud.
Sorry.
I'm Nikki.
And I'm Jules.
And this is Tangential, ostensibly a show where we every single week go through our internet search histories and pick out the things that we find the most interesting and talk about them, except we didn't do it for 3 months?
Sorry.
4 months? October, November, December, January. So this is the fourth month. This is episode 13, and we're sorry. Yeah.
Not to make excuses, but college is very difficult, and I'd
it's
like
so
to see
hard.
You do it.
It's really... No one else has done... College
no one else
before
has
us.
Done college but us. It's really, really hard, and I wouldn't expect
the other thing
you
is,
to understand.
Yeah, and no one else has done college and tried to do a podcast every week.
Never.
So,
no one on the history
no, it's
of
never
the
been
earth
done.
Has done that.
Nope. So, honestly, you should be thanking us every single week in the iTunes comments for taking time out of our days and weeks. To create good content for you. So you're welcome.
The best content. Yeah, you're so very welcome. jokes aside, we're super sorry.
Yeah, we're super sorry. If you haven't listened to the show before, that's not surprising. It's a show where every single week we go through our internet search histories, we pick out the things that we find the most interesting, and we chat about them for an indeterminate amount of time. It's pretty fun. We've done 13 other ones. You can go listen to them at tangential.xyz, but I'll do more of that at the end of the show. Jules, which day did you pick this week?
That's my name.
And what did you look up?
On Thursday, this is what I looked up. Well,
oh shit, this is for the week. Hold on, sorry. This is for the week of January 10th, right? Nope. January 15th, 2018.
It is the 21st. Okay. yesterday, Nikki and the rest of our group chat, we were having a conversation about musicals, and I had the opinion, and still hold this opinion, that I prefer In the Heights to Hamilton, and I think it is a better work of Lin-Manuel Miranda's, although both are substantial works that should be noted and viewed. And for all of Thursday, I was just trying to learn the lyrics for Sunrise, and I have not learned them at all. But it is a really great song, and I suggest everyone listen to it. And
I'll I'll put a piece of it in right now.
Sure, will Lynn allow that?
Well, under the United States copyright law, it's fair use as long as I use under 30 seconds, which I did.
I thought it was 10 seconds.
Okay, 10 seconds.
I'm not sure.
We'll find out.
Okay.
but you just heard it, so it was good. It's a very good song.
It is. Why do you like Hamilton more?
All right. Here's why I like Hamilton more. And I don't think that it is particularly because of the book or the music itself. I think it is literally time and place when Hamilton came out that it is more meaningful to me as a piece of media, because of when and where I was when it came out than when In the Heights came out. Because I came to In the Heights kind of late. Like, I listened to In the Heights when I was at Hofstra, but like, I wasn't really that attached to it. But because Hamilton came out, and I was listening to Hamilton when I was at Activision, and I felt bad about myself, and Hamilton was like a thing that made me not feel bad about myself, I have such a more thorough attachment to that show than I do to In the Heights. But I did make a resolution yesterday when Jules was talking about it to try to like consume In the Heights again. Also Les Mis, a show I don't really have that many feelings for.
Gonna rewatch Les Mis, right?
Yeah.
Right?
So
which he doesn't like.
I don't know. It's just like, I just don't have that big of an attachment to it.
He just doesn't find the French Revolution interesting. It's like the least interesting point of history to Nicholas, which makes no sense to me. Anyway, I think that Hamilton is a great musical. Even though you love musical theater, I think it's a great musical for people who don't like musical theater. Yeah. And in that way, it's kind of a unifying to the genre and to the platform of musical theater, which had been dying, I think.
It was not doing great.
It wasn't finding new fans. It had a very select fan basis. And I think In the Heights kind of speaks to people within that fan basis. But I also think it would reach... I think fans of Lin-Manuel Miranda would love In the Heights and say, this sounds exactly like Hamilton, or not exactly like Hamilton, I can hear how he has not evolved, but how his sound has... I'm not sure if it's evolved.
I think it's evolved. I think that like if you are listening, if you go back, so like Hamilton, the sound of Hamilton was not that much of a surprise to me because I had listened to In the Heights. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think if you would go back, you would realize that like Lin was on a different level 8 years ago, or however long ago In the Heights came out. Like you would realize like how he had been pushing the boundaries of what a traditional Broadway musical could sound like.
Yeah, because In the Heights wasn't on Broadway originally. It ran off Broadway for I don't know what the exact number is, but for multiple years it was off Broadway before he pushed it onto Broadway. It wasn't an immediate hit.
In the Heights was off Broadway for 2005 when it was produced in Connecticut, And then it was like in New York off Broadway in 2007, and then opened on Broadway as a Broadway production in March of 2008.
Yeah, that's a journey. In yeah. Connecticut, that's interesting. Is that because you went to Wesleyan? Yeah.
Let's find out. I don't know. That would require more research than I think we have time for.
Survey says? I don't know.
I don't know. We'll have that information for you next week in Corrections Corner.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
But yeah.
I just, there's something so cool to me about an artist's first work and
yeah.
seeing where they came from and what drove them, what first, I don't know, made them stand out to people and made them want to listen to them. And I think that comes through in the Heights, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also
really
think
like
that,
in the Heights.
There are people, like, I'm going to be completely honest. I did not know 21 Chump Street existed until we were sitting in the lobby of the Ontario or of Upland, and the kids at festival were doing it. And I was like, this is Lynn. I've never heard any of these songs before. Didn't know 21 Chump Street existed. So I think there are nuggets of like theater history that people who really love Hamilton are like, I don't want to say that they're ignorant of them, but like just don't know they exist because the impetus to explore the rest of the space is not really there, which I think is a shame because Hamilton is such a good vessel to enter theater.
Yeah.
Like enter the realm yeah. of musical theater, and I feel like if people aren't like using that as a stepping stone to
but
get
it also
places,
might
then
be a stopping point because there aren't many musicals like it, you know? Like
right.
you can
well,
watch
let
another
me, let me have you
you could watch another Lynn. Wait, what?
Have you heard of The Greatest Showman? Because
oh my god. Okay, that's it. This is why we haven't recorded since October, because Nikki has these absurd thoughts that he just feels compelled to verbalize when he should just keep them in his head forever.
This
I'm
is
not
the
talking about
show.
The greatest show. Oh my god.
All right, fine.
If you like The Greatest Showman, I don't mean
well,
to.
Well, I mean, I think if you, well, me personally,
say
I think
that
if you
have
like
bad taste
Showman,
in musicals.
You, like, bad, you have a bad taste in musicals.
I would suggest that you watch any other musical.
Any other one.
That's ever existed, including
the people,
Mamma Mia.
Wow. Holy shit. Slam. the people who wrote The Greatest Showman wrote La La Land, and La La Land is a better musical. So if you're going to, like, do that, like, go watch La La Land instead. But the choreography in The Greatest Showman overall is better than La La Land.
I just never vibed with the music. I just always
in
felt out
the
of
The Greatest
body.
Showman?
I was never sucked into the world because they were just, I mean, musicals can be anachronistic, but there was a lack of cohesion between the book,
the music,
and the,
and
music.
The book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time someone sang in The Greatest Showman, I let out an audible sigh because so much time had passed that I forgot that it was a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone started singing, and
I was
like,
there was
oh.
an excessive amount of music that didn't move along the plot whatsoever. I don't know.
But then you would miss the song where Zendaya and Zac Efron skydance.
Oh, Zach.
Listen, all right, this is the last thing on The Greatest Showman, and then we have to move on. Recast Zac Efron as Brendan Urie, and the film is better. I fixed it.
Yeah, I agree.
I fixed
because,
the film.
Well, I think if they went more down the route of, like, have you seen Big Fish?
Yes.
Yeah, I
if
think
they
if
just
they
made
kept
it Big
that
Fish.
Kind of vibe to it
yeah.
instead of, or, like, if they were true to the period, maybe I would be more interested in it. Just, like, it felt so modernized I couldn't connect to it. And unlike Hamilton, you know, where you can connect to that and be, I don't know. I just didn't like it from beginning to end.
It's a weird space. The opening number is good. I will say that.
And that's not to
say
all the actors were
good.
I think the performances were pretty solid for the most part.
Totally. Is it my turn to talk about my day?
I still have some stuff because I just got through In the Heights.
Holy shit. Okay, yeah, let's go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the next thing I did, for some reason, I know why. So my phone number, my home phone number, which we no longer use, I think it's actually disconnected. We don't have a phone number anymore, but it is our, it has been our Ralph's alternative ID phone number for the last decade. So when I was typing it in the other day, I was like, 571 has, why does 571 always remind me of something when I was typing it in at Ralph's? And then I was thinking about it, and then I realized, I lived at 571, or at an address that was 571. I'm not going to say the street name, because...
Nope, don't do that.
I don't know. When I lived in Sunnyvale, I lived on a street, and the address was 571. And I decided to look up that house on Google Maps and then Google Satellite, just to see what it looked like now, because I remember... You know when... You remember your childhood home? You've lived in multiple homes, yes. Right?
Yeah, just the two, but yes.
Yeah. Well, you know when you go back and you just think to yourself, wow, it's so much smaller. How did I live here? I don't remember my body being in this space, kind of. I kind of just wanted to see if I felt that way even through Google Satellite
looking
images.
Through a picture,
and looking at the house, it's completely changed. It's wrecked. My mom used to have this beautiful garden out front, and there used to be multiple orange trees in the back, and we had this really nice deck, and it used to be really nice. And then I called my parents and told them about it, and they were like, "Oh, it was always a dump." And I was like, "What?"
What?
I never felt that way. I felt like we lived in a really nice house and I was proud of it and I always wanted my friends to come over, and I don't know. It kind of was just like a shattering experience for me, I suppose. how when you're a kid you kind of build up your own fantasy world, literally.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things I did. The next thing I did was one of my friends told me about the possibility of there being a Heather's reboot, and I immediately thought that was an awful idea. And the people that are producing it, or the network that is going through with it, is Paramount Network TV, which was previously, do you know, formerly known as Spike TV. Yeah.
Oh, Spike. Yeah. And then, I remember that because, like, last week, Spike, the Twitter account for Spike, like, melted the fuck down. It just, like, did a branded, like, we're going to rip on Spike for a while because Spike is dying. And then they swore. They said the F word.
They just rebranded. And I guess that was their way of rebranding. And,
by killing the social media manager who worked for Spike.
Yeah. And the one of the new series that is going to reboot the network is Heathers. And get this. This is, you know how Heathers has found a new popularity in recent years because there's been the musical Heathers?
The musical, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I figured they'd try to pull in some of the music, but they're not. It's just going to be a remake of the movie, which, why? Why do that?
Why would you do that?
It's a very hard movie to make now just because of all the violence and I don't know.
But they want in on that Riverdale money.
Right, but it's a completely different vibe from Riverdale. It's
Yeah, but it's I think their logic is that the demos are the same at the very least.
And I just don't think you could ever find another Winona Ryder or Christian Slater. I just don't think you could find two kids that meet that vibe. Except maybe that new Netflix show, The End of the Fucking World, that kind of really has a Heathers vibe. I know a lot of people liked it, and I know a lot of people disliked it, but I'd be curious to see what your opinion is of it, Nikki. Did you watch it?
I did not. Okay. I have not seen the program.
Well, there's blood in it, so I'm not sure
should I watch the
how
program?
You will feel about it. But the music is really good. yeah, there is murder. Or not.
Hell yeah.
You'll see.
Anyway, who knows?
So this is the basis of this new Heathers reboot. I think it's a mini series. The Heathers, in the movie Heathers, there are three popular girls, and they're all called Heather, and they're perfect in every way. And Winona Ryder's character kind of just gets sick of them and decides to kill them with her boyfriend, Christian uh-huh. Slater's character. That's a really crude synopsis of what Heathers is, but just
not
watch
wrong.
It and you'll kind of get the vibe. Anyway, instead of making the three Heathers perfect in this reboot, they're the epitome of outcasts that have been accepted. So, you know how the Glee Club, all of the kids were uncool, even though they were really cool and attractive?
Yeah, and extremely attractive, yeah. And extremely talented, yes.
Yeah, so this kind of makes the Heathers people who would be considered outcasts in 90s movies, but are now apparently in high school. These kids have a level of, I want to say, according to this kind of mindset, a level of privilege. They're cool because they're other, and apparently, so just to tell you what the three Heathers are, there's one Heather that is overweight, there's one Heather that is Asian, and there's one Heather that is gay. And apparently that's
hell
what
yeah.
makes them cool. That's what makes
love
them cool.
Love to equate,
you know,
being a minority with being...
Yeah. So it's inherently problematic. And guess who the Winona Ryder character is? A blonde, pretty white girl.
Hell yeah.
Don't know how to feel about it.
Bad.
Switching
I
the
think
roles
is how...
up there. I think... I'm not sure what they're trying to get at. Maybe that, like, I don't know. Someone help me out there, because it just doesn't seem right or sit right with me. They're acting like acceptance is a bad thing, and that I don't know. That just sounds bad to you, right?
Yeah, that's like that is taking the wrong message from it. It's like bad.
It's interesting to flip the roles, and of course anyone could be a bad person, but we're kind of not too far into this post-modern kind of high school dynamic situation, you know, where the I think the roles have somewhat reversed in some schools, but in many schools they have not. In lots of high schools, at least from what I have heard from freshmen who have just entered UCLA, it's very much the same, where jocks and cheerleaders are still popular, you know?
Yeah.
I think we're not too far removed from that kind of culture to be commenting on how...
To be commenting on it in the reverse
outsiders
direction.
And minorities are popular. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Jules, what's your next thing?
My next thing. So, Thursday I got the chance to watch the first episode of The Assassination of Gianni Versace, where Darren Criss portrays Andrew Cunanan, and Edgar Ramirez plays Gianni Versace. I really liked it. I think that it's interesting in that, and I was reading about this. This is why I looked it up for, that's why it's included in my history. No one really knows Cunanan's motivation for killing Gianni Versace or any of his other victims, because he was a serial killer. He killed, I think, 5 people in total. So it's interesting to see how the show will kind of craft Cunanan's perspective, and also just the narrative of the story, because, spoiler alert, just turn this off for the next 15 seconds. Within the first episode, Cunanan murders Versace. And
whoa, no way. They kill
the
guy?
Within the first episode. Yeah. So it's going to be
Wait,
interesting.
Wait, so what happens after?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to do it. All we really know about Cunanan is that he had an extremely active imagination, and he was a compulsive liar. He was a man who wanted to be rich, who wanted to be famous, and he had a very, like I said, active imagination that was kind of verified through the literature that he read. Like, he had a huge collection of C.S. Lewis novels, which is, I think is very interesting. But anyway, I think it's going to be less clear cut than American Crime Story, the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah.
Which had a clear basis, I think, in that we were going to go through the trial, even though, well, I think the show definitely gives you who did it kind of answer, but I think it's going to be less clear cut with the assassination of Gianni Versace. But I really liked it. I thought it was beautiful aesthetically, and I mean, the pacing was a little slow, but I think I didn't mind because I thought the act, I was so compelled by the actors and just perfect casting, in my opinion. The last thing that I looked up was the Stargazer fish. So I had an assignment I had an assignment for my speculative philosophy class where we had to try to get into the consciousness of a a fish from the abyss, because we were reading this book by Flusser about kind of the psychology of the vampire squid, which isn't a squid at all. I think I was telling you about this the other day.
Yeah.
But anyway, we kind of just had to write a narrative from the perspective of a stargazer, understanding its anatomy and kind of its functions. So the stargazer itself has eyes on the top of its head. And I think you know about this fish. It's the fish that buries itself in kind of like the benthic layer of the ocean and camouflages in with the mud and then just attacks.
This is fucking horrifying.
I think it's a really cool animal. Yeah, so just some facts or some research I had to do. Go ahead.
The first Google image search result looks like a human face.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying. It's
terrifying. Yeah.
Kind of like...
Anyway.
A fleshy mask. Like a Michael Myers kind of mask, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here's some facts that I learned about, because in order for me to get into the consciousness, quote unquote, of an animal, I had to understand more about it. Some of the things I learned is that its eyes are at the top of its head, and so is its mouth. It's extremely adaptable and very venomous. Its spine is venomous, and it can discharge up to 50 volts of electricity, which is amazing, and which means it's capable of harming humans if we fuck with it. But unless it's disturbed, it won't hurt humans. It won't see a purpose. It knows its mouth can't encapsulate our bodies. It'll pretty much only use its electricity when it senses its prey nearby, and it'll stun its prey and apply the jolt. And then it usually eats small fishes and crustaceans of that kind. So it eats a lot of crabs. I watched a lot of video of it eating crabs. And it's kind of hard to spot because it camouflages directly into the sand and mud. It buries itself. And because of its eyes and mouth are on the top of its head, it works out perfectly for it because it can see exactly what's above it. And it's not a really active fish. It doesn't swim too much, and it stays in the benthic layer until it has to mate in the spring or summer, and then it just goes back down to where it's supposed to. And it's a solitary fish. It doesn't live with other fishes. And yeah, it's pretty terrifying. I'd look it up if I were you.
Yeah, it's so wild. There's so many creatures on fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, there's like, so many. That, like, can do electricity.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
There's so many animals that we don't know about, that we may never know about because they're in the abyss and we can't reach them.
Send James Cameron back down there. Get him in that submarine. Give him another better camera.
Isn't James Cameron actually Cameron? You know, my professor kept on pronouncing his name James Cameron. Like, that's camera
wrong.
On.
I think that's
is
wrong.
It? Is it?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure his name is just James Cameron.
Cameron. Well, I guess we'd have to ask him. But James isn't he Cameron. A biologist?
I thought he was a movie boy.
Yeah, he
I think
is,
he's just rich and had the money.
No,
yeah,
I think
he's Canadian. His name is Cameron.
But I think
no, I think he just had
he actually
money.
Has a background in science.
Hold on, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page now.
He majored in physics, but then he
yeah, that's not
and then
bio.
He switched to English.
Great.
He
went to Fullerton College.
His dad was a scientist, I think. His dad was an engineer.
Wait, and then he became a truck driver. He never finished school. So, well, no, he's not a science
school
boy.
Is hard.
I think he just had
school
money.
School is hard.
We established
no,
that at the
he
beginning.
Was. He obviously always had a
Yeah, he just
love
had a knack
science.
For science.
If you're going to make
he made
movies
some good
like
movies and then
Terminator
got very rich and very
Aliens,
bored.
You have to have some love for science and science fiction. Yeah.
And he loves the ocean because he made Titanic.
Yeah. And The Abyss.
And The Abyss. And Avatar.
And Piranha Part 2.
Yeah, he
just
loves
list,
it.
I just list all of his movies.
Cameron is a member of the NASA Advisory Council and is working on the project to put cameras on an upcoming human mission to Mars.
I told
Cameron
you
has also given
science.
Speeches and raised money for the Mars Society, a nonprofit organization lobbying for the colonization of Mars. Huh. Well... Good for
he cares.
Cameron.
He cares. yeah. So that
did
was
you
my
know that
Thursday.
In 2006? Sorry, just one more thing. In 2006, James Cameron's wife co-founded the Muse School, which in 2015 became the first K-12 vegan school in the United States.
I mean, his net worth is nearly $2 billion, isn't it?
Yes. The school ridiculous. Has been described, I'm talking about the Muse School now, the school has been described as a, quote, utopia in which children learn to respect nature and be happy about diversity. The school allows students to decide what they learn based on their inclination. In June 2015, the school had 146 students, including three of the Cameron children.
How much is tuition?
$1 trillion. It's in Malibu. It's a 22-acre campus in Malibu.
I always forget that he was married to Catherine Bigelow.
I think Catherine Bigelow also likes to forget that she was married to James Cameron.
She's so accomplished and cool.
Muse, hold on. Now I'm interested in how much the tuition is. I found it. $20,000. Sorry.
Oh.
Preschool is $20,000. The elementary school, so K-6, $26,000. Middle school, 7 and 8, $27,000. And high school is $30,000.
I think that's up there with most of the private schools in Los Angeles.
In LA,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's only 140 students, how else is it supposed to support itself? outside
off
of
the
billions.
Off of the fact, yeah, Cameron's. That off of the fact that James Cameron has $2 billion. How else is it supposed to support itself?
Well, from truck driver to billionaire.
James Cameron did a lot. Yeah, good for James Cameron. Is it my turn to talk about some
yeah,
garbage?
I'm done.
Hell yeah. You ever heard of the television program We Bear Bears?
No, never,
it is
never
consumed.
Heard of it.
All right. Well, let me tell you about it. It's a Cartoon Network show that started in 2015, and it was created by Daniel Chong. It's a show on the Cartoon Network. It's all you need to know, really. But it has completely consumed my week. It's basically been the only thing that I've been watching all week because it's super great. It started out as a webcomic called The Three Bear Bears in, 2014. That's not true. 2011. I didn't write the date down, but it used to be a webcomic that Cartoon Network was then like, hey, you want to make this a TV show? So Daniel turned it into a short, and then they picked it up for a series, which is cool because it's a very good television program. It follows three bears, a grizzly bear, a panda bear, an ice bear, a polar bear. And the voice cast is ridiculous. It's got Dimitri Martin, Bobby Moynihan, Jason Lee, Patton Oswalt, Cameron Esposito, Ellie Kemper. Like, this ridiculously big and famous cast as voice actors, which is cool. Jules, you've seen it.
I have.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think it's good?
I enjoy it.
It's good.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that the...
They're just cute. But beyond them being cute, they have fun personalities and they're fun to watch. I think the extraneous characters are where the show kind of meets its downfall.
I don't like... So there's a Bigfoot character named Charlie. I cannot stand Charlie. I'm not a person who,
he just looks like something straight out of a Dr. Seuss novel.
Totally. 100%. He looks like a Dr. Seuss.
And he doesn't fit the animation of the show either. But maybe that's part of it.
I feel like that maybe is the point because he's Bigfoot. He's like a cryptid. I don't know. It's super weird. But that has been a thing. I did not realize that Estelle did the theme song until midway through season two when I was watching the credits, because I had been watching it on Hulu, and Hulu makes the actual play window super small and then shows the thumbnail for the next episode, and I was actually watching the credits in the thumbnail, and then it was theme song by Estelle, and I was that's obviously Estelle. I feel like it's such if you told when American Boy came out, if you told me or anyone that was listening to Estelle and Kanye whenever American Boy came out, that that would be Estelle a decade and a half later. Estelle would be a voice actress on a Cartoon Network show and then also have the theme song to a different one. I don't know if anyone would believe you, but that's how that's shaken out. But I think the big reason why I like We Bear Bears, and it's also good because since Steven Universe is so sporadic in when it does and doesn't come out, the tone of each show is radically different, and the tone and the scope of each show is radically different. So Steven Universe is this big, it's a big show, so each episode might be small, but there is a bigger through line for the story that conceivably has an end. We Bear Bears does not have that. There are some episodes where they focus on them as cubs, but those are not the most important episodes. But each story that We Bear Bears tells is very confined and small and super relatable because they're very human stories, even though they're being portrayed by bears. It is also one of the few representations of the Bay Area that I don't hate. So
that's hilarious.
That's cool.
What interpretations of the Bay Area do you hate? Do they include the Mighty Bee?
Holy shit, the Mighty Bee did take place here. Remember that show? I totally forgot. But kind of on that same track, so at the end of every single episode of a Cartoon Network show, they do this end, there's an end slate. It's right, it's all black and white. There's a couple of frames of animation of the characters in the show doing a thing, but it's set to seven notes. It's dun 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 dun, which is the cartoon
the Cartoon
theme.
Network boomerang kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and I looked into that theme, and I couldn't really find that much information outside of the fact that it was composed by a man named Steve Marks. I'll put it in right now. Okay, so you've heard it. And every single time it plays, like, I whisper to myself, cartoon, cartoon, because, like, I don't remember, like, really where that comes from. I looked it up. Cartoon, cartoon started as a, like, a short animation series called, I wrote it down. It was called, oh, no, I thought I wrote it down. I think it was called What a Cartoon or something. Yeah, What a Cartoon in 1995, which was this initiative by Cartoon Network to, like, get shows and stuff on the network, and it was an easy way for them to pilot shows without, like, giving too many people, like, without, like, going all in on one show. They gave a little bit of money to a bunch of creators, and then they animated shorts, and then they had the audience vote on them. So out of the first couple of years of What a Cartoon, these are the shows that came out of that series. Dexter's Lab, Johnny Bravo, Cow and Chicken, I Am Weasel, The Powerpuff Girls, Ed, Edd n Eddy, and Courage the Cowardly Dog all came out of one, like, one set of What a Cartoon things, and then, like, that is the basis for, like, so many human beings' cartoon background. That show was spearheaded by a guy named Fred Siebert, who created Nicktoons at Nickelodeon. Like, as he was leaving Nickelodeon, he was like, hey, you guys should start Nicktoons. And Nickelodeon was like, that's a good idea. And then they started Nicktoons. And then he went from Nickelodeon to Cartoon Network. From Cartoon Network, he left Cartoon Network and started Fred Rider, which is a studio that has done Fairly Odd Parents, Chalk Zone, My Life as a Teenage Robot, Adventure Time, Bravest Warriors, and apparently, I did not know this, the Castlevania show on Netflix, that was also them.
What's Castlevania?
Like, they partnered with... Oh, man. Castlevania is a... it's a video game series by Konami. Came out for the NES at first. Where it's basically about vampires. Like, it's about vampires. Like, you're killing vampires. One, it's really dumb. One of the characters' name is Alucard, which is just Dracula backwards, and the entire reveal of the game is that you are Dracula. Castlevania is wild. But, like, when Castlevania came out, it was, like, revolutionary. Like, Castlevania and, to an extent, like, Metroid, which is a different game that also came out for the NES, like, revolutionized, like, that genre of kind of roguelike adventure games where you would go through dungeons and stuff and you would pick up items and then those items would help you get to a next part. But so much of the combat or so much of the game was based on combat that was kind of repetitive and required you to solve puzzles in ways that, like, use the weapons that you had, and that spurred a genre called Metroidvania games, which is still extremely popular today. But yeah, that was, like, basically all I did this week because I had been so invested in, like, We Bear Bears that I kind of dug deep into the history of Cartoon Cartoon. But, like, basically it was started by this one dude, Fred Siebert, and then it has kind of exploded. And now, like, there's a little bit of it all over the place. But, like, I just can't believe that one studio did Adventure Time and Fairly Odd Parents. Like, that is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
That's basically it. That was my week. A super
also,
super one note week.
Sounds kind of fun.
Castlevania is pretty good. There are more bad games in that series than there are good games, but the good games are good. Mm. Also, the music in Castlevania is fucking dope.
Is it gothic? Like, what's the vibe?
Yeah, it is. It's like it's gothic. It's like it's chiptune gothic because, like,
organ
the
music?
First. Yeah, but, like, but because they couldn't use organs,
the
like, organs were
opera.
Too deep. Because organs were too deep of a noise to get out of an NES, they had to, like, go around. I'll put a little bit of the Castlevania music in here. I think this song is going to be from Castlevania 2. Vampire Killer from Castlevania. It's so good. I'm not the biggest fan Castlevania. They are good games. They are not, like, my favorite kinds of games, but the music from Castlevania is super good. So I'll play a little bit of Vampire Killer from Castlevania right now, just so you guys can get a taste of it. But yeah, that's good. That was my week, really, honestly. It's just been a lot of me watching Wee Bear Bears and dreading coming back to school, because I'm back in San Francisco now, unfortunately. Yeah, one more semester and I'm done. But yeah, how are your classes? Are things going good, Jules? How's your school life? As we start to wrap up.
I just have a lot. Told
it's
you.
It's just, there's just a lot. It is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. Yeah. What's your favorite class that you're doing, you're taking right now?
I have to say my production class, it's really cool. I'm learning a lot about producing feature films and how things get produced. My professor started his career PAing on Edward Scissorhands, which is a cool fun fact.
That's awesome.
He's produced a lot of things. He produced American Beauty and is actually part of the Academy of... He's part of the Academy and votes every year, which is really cool. Wow. Yeah. He is a... Yeah. I think that class is really fun, and it's fun to have professors like that with just so much experience who...
Who have... Yeah, like you say, like you were saying, like who have a lot of experience like in the field that they are teaching right. about.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Yeah. I haven't started classes yet. You? I start tomorrow. Yeah,
you
haven't.
What are you most excited for?
I'm taking a class called Pop Culture in the Media or something. I don't know what the class is called. Everyone is just calling it Pop Culture because the name is long. But I'm really jazzed about it. We have to do a project that is a mixtape. So we have to take things that we find culturally relevant and figure out a way to find a through line through each of these pieces and string them together in a way that makes sense. And then we also have to, the paper, the written aspect of it is that we're basically writing the liner notes. So yeah, I'm excited. I really don't know how things are going to shake out, but I'm really excited about that class. Also, I'm taking a class called soccer, and I just play soccer for a while.
I mean, that sounds like fun, but it also sounds like a very bad idea because
100%
gym classes should have been left in middle school.
100%, yeah. But I did want to wake up and kind of kick a ball around, so I think this will be okay. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. We'll find out.
We'll check in with you.
We'll check in in a couple of weeks, see how that's going. I can't believe we did it. We recorded another episode. Good for us.
Oh, what a feat.
Good for us. If you enjoyed this episode of Tangential, you can find the rest of the episodes we've done at tangential.xyz. Does not sound like a URL, but it is. Tangential.xyz. You can follow me on Twitter at Godsua. You can follow Jules on Twitter at JS Klimek. You can follow the show on Twitter at tangential_. You can email the show. Please email us. You can email us at tangentialpod@gmail.com. And if you're listening to the show on iTunes, please leave us, Apple Podcasts. You can please leave us a review and 5 stars. It really helps us. Probably, I don't know. The podcast isn't big enough, but it could be if you left us a 5-star review and a comment. And yeah, we'll see you same time next week. We won't see you. You'll hear us at the same time next week. We did it.
As always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show.
Thanks,
show notes
y'all.
Are in the description.
Oh yeah, the show notes are in the description, so you can find out all the stuff we talked about.
Yep.
And that's it. What a good outro.
Bye.
Fucking nailed it. Bye.